This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
How was school?
Worst day of my life. What do you think?
Well, I want you to go see if Tina wants some of this.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and it's Gruntled Workers Day. I'm pretty sure Joe tried to gruntle me the other day. Ooh, I had to get HR involved. Today, to talk about gruntling your bank account, we welcome a dynamic flipping houses duo from the Mile High Fi podcast, Carl Jensen, and from the Bigger Pockets Money Show, Mindy Jensen. In our headlines, one industry is bracing for higher interest rates. Should you? Plus, we'll throw out the Haven Lifeline to David, who's curious about cashing out sick days upon retirement. And then I'll come in with my gruntled trivia. And now, two guys who are happy to help you stack your Benjamins, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Welcome to another Benjamin Stacking Wednesday, peeps. I'm Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. Does anybody say peeps anymore? Doug, does anybody?
The kids do, Joe. All the kids.
All the kids, all the hip kids and me. Welcome to Wednesday. You're halfway through your week. Sit back, relax, because we have a financial journey for you to go on. A one-hour cruise that hopefully doesn't turn out to be, what was it? Was that supposedly a three-hour cruise? Wasn't that?
A three-hour tour.
By the way, on a three-hour tour, do you ever lose sight of the land? do you get far enough away? I mean, there's half our audience has no idea what the hell we're talking about, including the man sitting across the table from me because he's way younger. It's Mr. OG. You never watched that show, did you?
Significantly younger. Yes, it was on while I used to get my hair cut at the barber shop that my dad would take us.
I think all of us were seeing it in reruns. None of us were watching the OG show.
The old Gilligan's Island
Marianne, show. By the way. It's Marianne.
You're a Marianne, not
just
a Ginger.
To answer the question I know you were going to ask.
Or a professor.
Not Ginger.
None of those. We got a great, great show today. We got the professors, by the way, speaking of professors, we got the professors of flipping houses, Carl and Mindy Jensen with us today. And if you haven't heard Carl and Mindy, Doug, you called them the dynamic duo. They totally, they're amazing. Just a great couple. Love talking to them and spent some time in Longmont. And I was so excited that I actually brought my recorder with me. So we sat down at their house and we chatted about their real estate journey. And so we will replay that for you today. But first, we got a great headline for you. And Doug is waiting to say something. No? Are you just open and closing your mouth like a fish?
That's how I breathe, Joe. I'm a mouth breather.
I didn't know what was happening. That you're like leading into the mic.
No, I don't know. I mean, you kept talking about our guests, and I'm wondering if am I already a member of the Mile High Fi Club? I mean, I've spent money in Denver.
There you go.
So I think I'm in the Mile High.
You got like a sticker for that, OG? Some kind of is it some secret club? If you spent money in Denver?
Wow. He is just not into it today. He's just not going to participate with the class today.
He got nothing. Oh my God. It's a great podcast when he doesn't talk. Yeah. Got Carl Mindy Jensen. Carl Mindy Jensen coming up. We've got, we're going to talk about sick days, which OG should have taken a sick day today. But first, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. It's Military Appreciation Month, and I want to share appreciation for one of our stackers I met in Cleveland for the second time. Keith just drove his car off the road. But Keith, a proud military member, I enjoyed seeing Keith. And you know what? Eric was there too, who was in the Marines, but both of these fine gentlemen served our country that I met in Cleveland. I want to give a shout out to them. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just Keith and Eric, but all their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. They offer 24/7 help from their U.S.-based member service centers. They offer resources like Best Cities After Service to help veterans transition to civilian life and Best Careers for Military Spouses to support our military families. All branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families are eligible for Navy Federal membership. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate this month, and you'll see all of our Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. All right, let's get rolling.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our stacking Benjamin's headlines.
In our headline today, it comes from the Wall Street Journal. Oh, gee, I like these case studies because often when we look at what happens in business, we can make better personal financial decisions. I don't know if you know this, but interest rates are going up. Did you know that? Any idea?
I heard there was a rumor that they might go up.
Little thing.
Well, I've noticed it's gone up a lot faster on my home equity line than my savings account, but which is weird because you think it's the same bank. You think it would go up simultaneously. But
so weird.
What do I know about banking?
So strange. What is that? Phil Town, I remember the first time I met him, he had a truism, which I remembered the last 25 years, that is, banks don't make a lot of money on every deal, OG. They just make money on every deal.
That's right. I do. You want to start a bank? Stacking Benjamin's Bank?
Oh, SB Federal. That sounds very official, doesn't it?
It does.
It's got a nice ring to it.
The three of us can be the on the board.
For now, let's see if we can just get through this headline.
Okay.
It's written by Laura Foreman at the Wall Street Journal. Cruise lines can't duck their debt. Cruise ships, it seems, are like ducks, elegant and effortless above the water, fighting like crazy to stay afloat beneath. On the surface, the industry's finally steaming ahead after over a year at bay. The world's reopened, occupancy limits have relaxed, and bookings are at or above pre-pandemic levels. Carnival, Royal Caribbean, and Norwegian cruise lines all eyeing a near-term return to profitability this year, a milestone they're hoping will reignite investor interest, with their shares down an average of over 45% over the past 6 months. However, they have this issue, OG, that they have a ton of debt, and now because a lot of that's floating with interest rates, even though they're shoveling in money again, they can't get out from under this debt load that they have.
Well, this would be the same thing for somebody that has credit card debt, you know, in their personal life. It sounds really super attractive to take your cash advance at 0% or refinance your debt at 0% and do that credit card surfing game as you're trying to pay stuff off, or God forbid, you're using it to like accumulate debt. You know, you have a purchase and you're like, I'll just 0% it for a while. But then you wake up 12 months later, and especially the last 6 months, now your interest rate used to be 11 or 12, and it's probably closer to 19 to 21 now on your credit card debt. The same thing is happening in cars and stuff. I talked to a friend of mine who purchased a car, and he said that he got a 3.9% rate or something, which isn't terrible, but it's not zero, and it's not 0.9 like the good old days, so to speak. So that cost of interest is very high if you have debt, if you have variable rate debt in particular.
It's a frustrating thing because I think for a lot of people, they felt like they were just beginning to get ahead, like things were starting to go well for them. But to your point, if you still have debt, those payments, they creep up on you. The amount that you're paying out to a bank that you weren't paying 6 months to them because of the rising interest rate tide.
Yeah. I mean, credit cards are usually priced as, you know, in terms of your payment, it's usually the interest that you accumulated that month plus 1 or 1.5% of the balance. So as that interest rate rises, that interest amount that you're paying goes up, of course, and therefore your payment goes up, and it goes up quite a bit. You know, it's really eye-opening if you don't do any really significant budgeting. If you just have a line item in your budget for like credit card payment or something like that, break that payment down into interest and principal.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like the bank does a good job of this for your mortgage. When you get the statement at the end of the year, it says, this is how much you paid in principal, this is how much you paid in interest. The first house payment that I made on this house, or the first year of house payments that I made on this house, when I got that statement back that said, you made this much in principal and this much in interest, and the interest number was like 3x what the principal number was.
Yeah.
I just said, okay, I'm not paying the bank more than I'm paying myself back, right? Like I have to at least make those numbers even. And so that was kind of my personal goal for a long time. And the same thing, I think you got to look at if you've got other consumer debt, you have to look and see how much of that payment, you know, you're paying $500 a month on your Visa card, like how much of that is interest? It's probably 2/3 of it. And
that's
a big number.
On those mortgages, OG, you know, the way the amortization table works, and I think a lot of people don't realize this, the lender gets most of their money in the early years, right? So you're not paying 4%, or if you're lucky enough to have gotten 3% or even 2 points, that's not what you're paying. Your first year, even at a 2 point something, you're paying, man, maybe 60, 65% interest in that first year.
Right. Don't have a lot of first years, basically. Yeah,
right. And making big payments in those early years, especially, can really drive down that total cost of homeownership during the life of your loan. You know, I was reading a piece because I know what a lot of people do. They go out and they look for, okay, well, if interest rates are rising, how do I prepare for this? And I found a piece from Investopedia that I'm not as excited about as I was when I read Laura Forman's piece about the cruise lines. This is called How to Prepare for Rising Interest Rates. And I just want to go over what they tell you to do. Number one is cut your bond duration. That's their number one
recommendation. I mean, the obvious thing that you want to look at is make a list of all the duration of all of your bonds and then take out a scissors and cut it. What the hell?
Doug, I know this is on mom's to-do list for you. Once you get done cutting the lawn for mom, she wants you to also cut her bond durations. Cut the bond duration.
Can I use the electric clippers for that?
For the bond duration?
Yeah, because that would save a lot of time, I think.
It totally would.
Okay, all right. On it.
I get really frustrated. How many people buy individual bonds, OG?
Well, even if you have a bond fund, dollars to donuts, you don't know what the duration is. And thricely, I don't think that
thricely
have any idea what the hell we're talking about when we say cut your bond duration. Some people do, but I would say the vast majority of people don't.
Wow.
That's a dumb thing. Should we tell them or just skip it?
Doug, when he wakes up big. All of a sudden, he goes to thricely, and
there's smiles happening.
His eyes are open. What's going on here? You know what? Let's skip it because
don't cut your bond rate. Well, you should, but
yeah. But if you own individual bonds, congratulations. You're in the, you know, they talk about the one percenters. You're in the 1% of people that own individual bonds that listen to this show.
Well, but the other thing too is if you do have individual bonds, which would be fine for your fixed income, then you really honestly don't have anything to worry about. The bond prices go down. If you have individual bonds, you are contractually obligated or contractually guaranteed,
they're contractually obligated.
Yeah, to pay you the full amount at the end of the bond. like when it's over, it's a loan.
Just hold it.
So just hang on to it. You know, you're not getting the cherry interest that's coming out with the new ones right now, but you're not going to lose any money as long as you hold it for the duration of the period of time that the loan is for, the bond is for. So if you do have individual bonds, that's actually kind of a good thing. And in today's market, and whatever price you see on your statement, you can disregard because you're going to get all your money back, supposedly.
I like their second piece on here better, though. Look to stocks and stock funds. Interest rates go up, OG. Look to stock funds.
Well, I mean, again, with fixed income, it's fixed, right? I mean, you have some debt that's going to be variable in your life, like credit cards, but the vast majority of your debt is fixed, and it's fixed on length and terms. So it's like your mortgage is going to be whatever, your car payment's going to be whatever. It's not going to change. So if you're an investor in that, then you're not going to keep up if interest rates go up. So the only way that you can keep up is to have money invested in the ownership of companies where they can affect change immediately based on interest rates. So stocks are really kind of the only place to be.
The next one on here, again, use bond ladders. Beware of inflation hedges. I do want to dive into this for a second because some people play the inflation hedge game. They get into gold, they get out of gold. And to their point, I think they're right on that. If you're playing, well, number one, I think if you're playing that game in the first place, you're betting on where you think the economy's going, which is a losing errand. But on the second point, they talk about rising interest rates, OG, tend to curb inflation. That's why the Fed is raising interest rates. And so your inflation hedges tend to perform poorly. So I do agree with that.
Well, gold's not an inflation hedge anyway. So stocks are inflation hedge.
People think it is. People think they are.
Oh, well, then it must be.
Yes.
If they think it must be, who's that Napoleon, not Napoleon Dynamite.
Dynamite?
Napoleon, somebody else. Napoleon Hill. Napoleon Dynamite, Napoleon Hill. They're kind of the, anyways.
Did you just compare the dude who wrote Think and Grow Rich?
Yes.
To the dude who wore a t-shirt that says vote for Pedro?
Yes. Gosh.
Really good with the nunchucks.
Come on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gosh.
The best thing to do in a rising interest rate environment, OG, the one thing I could think of is lock in your interest rates. I mean, wherever you're at, if you've got variable rate loans, like lock in fixed rates.
Yeah, and aggressively paid off. You know, all the stuff that we were talking about 6 months ago or a year ago about, hey, it doesn't make sense to like refinance your house and take the equity and or invest it. And, you know, I can arbitrage this interest rate and that sort of stuff. That's all super sexy when that spread between the current rate and your stock portfolio is quite large. When all of a sudden your interest rate on your debt is 6 or 7% and the return on your stock portfolio is minus 18, where should the focus be? That's, I think, why one of those principles of just don't owe anybody any money really saves you a boatload in the long run, because during times like this, you're not paying all that interest expense. And then you have the cash flow availability to then do what you really should be doing, which is to be buying more stock.
Well, hopefully the cruise lines are able to use this this return to profitability to maybe pay down some of that debt and do better as well. We will do a deeper dive on debt management and what rising rates mean, and maybe some pieces that we like better in our newsletter, The 201. If you want to do a deeper dive on this topic or any topic that we talk about on the show, head to stackybenjamins.com/201, the number 201. And, we will get you signed up for our newsletter that comes out twice a week. They give awards for newsletters. I think this would be an award-winning newsletter at this point. Just fantastic stuff.
Pretty sure they do. Pretty sure they do give awards for newsletters, Joe.
Do they really?
I think so.
Oh, we gotta submit ours, because I will put ours against any of those. Coming up next, talk about award-winning. These guests are just fantastic award winners. Carl and Mindy Jensen are a powerhouse, not just when it comes to real estate, but also chatting about it with people on the internet. Carl is the co-host of the fairly new Mile High Fi podcast. He also is the brain behind the Mr. 1500 blog. We'll talk about his creation of the Mr. 1500 blog and why he did that. Carl, for a long time, worked in the construction industry, didn't want to do it anymore. Said, you know what, how do I get out of this early? Decided he had 1,500 days left and began his journey in chronicling it. Mindy Jensen, of course, has been for a long time, was the community manager at Bigger Pockets, a fantastic real estate community online. And she's the co-host with the CEO of Bigger Pockets, Scott Trench, of the Bigger Pockets Money podcast. They are up next. But before that, Mr. Doug, you got some trivia that might leave a smile on our face.
I always do, Joe. Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And sure, I'm gruntled here on Gruntled Workers Day. If we're talking about being happy, we should talk about the happiest place on earth. No, not talking about Disney again. Have you seen all the sweaty, crying children around 4 p.m. at that place? No, we're talking about the place where everyone leaves with a smile, the Mustang Ranch. So my question is, what city is the Mustang Ranch associated with?
Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union lets you experience more from everyday commutes to your next big vacation. The flagship credit card earns you 3 times the points on travel. So if you pay your credit cards off on time, you can start collecting some nice points. You get rewarded for wherever you're headed next. Plus, this premium travel card has a low annual fee of $49 and 2 times the points on all purchases outside of travel, meaning the rewards don't have to end even when the vacation does. And remember, if you're not paying your credit card off every month, rewards don't matter. But if they do, why wouldn't you capture more rewards? Speaking of rewards, you can get a Navy Federal auto loan and reward yourself with a low-cost loan if you need a loan for that new car. Applying is easy. You can do it on their mobile app, online, or by phone. And it's so fast, you can get a decision in seconds. Navy Federal's great rates on auto loans, plus with their car buying service powered by TrueCar, you can shop, compare, and get the upfront pricing on your next new or used car. If you have to take out a loan, you want to make sure you get a great price on the loan and you want to get great financing. Of course, that's where Navy Federal comes in, because at Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, open to the armed forces, the DOD, veterans, and their families. Flagship rates are variable and range between 10.74% and 18% APR based on creditworthiness. ATM fees for cash advances are up to $1 at non-Navy Federal ATMs. Credit and collateral subject to approval. Message and data rates may apply. Visit NavyFederal.org for more information and to apply. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they can also be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. Oh, God. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for 5. That's right. U.S. Cellular, a company that sells phones, wants us to put down our phones and to see what we find. Learn more at uscellular.com/built-for-us.
Hey there, stackers. I'm Mustang Ranch restaurant only patron, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. Don't judge. The ribeye steak is to die for. The Mustang Ranch is a legal escort service, meaning that they rent only Ford Escorts, of course. It's the oldest service of its kind, and they even had a reality show about it. So, what city is the Mustang Ranch associated with? Reno, Nevada. And now, to help you turn your money into a working girl, Carl and Mindy Jensen.
And coming down to their basement, it's weird because I'm normally in my basement. We've got 2 people here. One who I think wins the award for guy we've talked about having on the show more times than any other, who's never appeared on the Stacky Benjamin show, and his spouse who needs a frequent flyer pass because she's been on a lot. Carl and Mindy Jensen are here. How are you guys?
Hi, Joe. I'm doing very well. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Thanks for being my hoteliers.
Yeah, and thank you so much for having me. I am excited to be on. I don't know why it didn't work out in the past. I blame myself, but if you have to have one of us, I'll be honest, Mindy's a much better guest. So
I don't think so, man. I've listened to you and Doug on your podcast, and it's slightly fun. Slightly fun.
Thanks for saying that, Joe.
Is this episode 1500?
This is not, but we're getting close. We're up to 12 something.
Oh, maybe you could save this for
episode 1500. Well, you know what? That episode is devoted to you guys because you are Mr. and Mrs. 1500. And let's actually start there. I want to talk about your life today not your life when you started? Because I think that a lot of people just need to know why this is important. Carl, when you guys have your average day to day, what time do you leave the house for work?
I don't have a job, so I wake up whenever I wake up. I haven't set an alarm in many, many years.
And you're how old?
I am 48.
And your much younger spouse also, you do have a job.
I do have a job. I'm actually older than he is.
Oh, wow. Fooled me.
You're so sweet, Joe.
Joe wins big points.
You can tell I've been married for a long time. I'm like, I got to check all these boxes. All right. Nope.
I do have a job.
You do, but it's a job that you love.
It is a job that I love so much. I would almost do it for free.
Which, by the way, I think is the point. If you, let's be clear here, you could get rid of that job today.
I don't have to work and I would still have enough money to live for the rest of our lives. We would still have enough money. It's our money, Joe. What? And we would still have enough money to live for the rest of our lives very comfortably.
I don't know, Carl. I've been here 24 hours and I feel like it's Mindy's money and you're kind of along for the ride.
I know. Note that she just said, I was that a Freudian slip? Are you planning something?
But it wasn't always like that, Carl. I mean, there was a point where this was all a dream, which was the point of becoming Mr. 1500.
Yeah, the blog is fairly new. We launched the blog January of 2013. We discovered financial independence pretty late in life. I was late 30s, I think 37, that would have been. October of 2012, I had a bad day at work and Googled, how do I retire early? And I didn't even really think that was a thing. I was just so desperate. My job was so stressful. I thought it was going to kill me early. And I think it actually would have done that. But anyway, I did that Google search and up came Mr. Money Mustache and J.D. Roth. And they talked about retiring early. And especially with Pete, I think he said he retired at 31. I'm like, my first thought was, what kind of scam have I found on the internet? This is just nonsense. No one retires when they're 31.
Right. And you're what? You're 38 then?
Yeah.
Doing some quick math here.
Yeah. And then I started reading his blog a little bit. I'm like, no, it's only a numbers problem. As soon as I accumulate this amount of money, I can leave my job. I don't have to work forever. And the cool thing was, even though we didn't know about financial independence before that, we were savers. I had money insecurity issues growing up. So as soon as I could, we maxed out our 401ks and Roths and all that stuff. So we were in a good place. We were set up to retire early, even though we didn't know about it.
Even though you didn't know what the game was at the time.
Yeah, that put a name to what we were already doing and gave us, it moved the goal up. If I didn't find that, I don't know what would have happened. Maybe we would have retired with just tons of money that we would have never been able to spend, which is funny because that's how it's worked out anyway. Life is good.
But I still get this feeling, Mindy, that Carl comes home one day after reading the stuff on the internet like a house on fire.
He was working from home, so he just came downstairs and said, hey, I found this thing and I'm going to retire. I'm going to quit my job. I'm like, great, do it. Because he was so stressed out. He was not hiding his stress. He was really, really hating his job. I'm like, quit your job. We can figure it out. You're smart. You can go get another job and then, you know, you can get a better job. You can get a job that isn't so stressful. He's like, and I'm going to write a blog about it. I'm like, well, that's just stupid.
But these bloggers are making money hand over fist.
He didn't even make money on his blog for like 3 years.
No, but that's good. I love the idea, though, of telling your story. And I want to stop for a second here because I think this is really important. At the time, you didn't really know if you had enough for financial independence, but Mindy's saying, hey, we'll figure this out. I mean, I feel like that is kind of the point of this story, that even if you're not there yet, pausing and going, what the hell am I doing, Carl, I think is a great thing.
Yeah. Well, number one, I'll back up a second. I'm so thankful to have a spouse who was on board from the get-go. You always hear these stories in the financial independence community. Hey, I discovered Mr. Money Mustache and I'm on board, but my spouse is not.
Now. Yeah, yeah.
What do I do now? And I did have a spouse on board, which was very good. And what was your original question? I hijacked it, Joe. Sorry.
No. Well, that's a big piece of it because what Mindy said was, hey, you didn't say this, Mindy, but it sounded like without even doing the math, right? Without even figuring out if you can retire forever, this idea of quit your job because it's not for you and we'll figure it out, I think is a strong place because you don't want to live your life in this regret. Like I've talked to so many people that are like, I remember my high school track coach and we were on our way to the state meet and he was telling me, cause there were only a couple of us that qualified. So it was one of the few times I was in a spot with just, you know, where he and I are having a conversation and he said, you know, I always wanted to be a singer and I never did it. And he was like 55 and he thought it was too late. He's like, no, I know I never did it. And I regret that I didn't do that. And so this idea that you can hit the pause button that Mindy's talking about and figure it out at 38, regardless of the math.
Yeah. To anyone who doubts that they can do it, I say, instead of making excuses for why you can't, figure out why you can, because there are a lot of ways that it might not be as easy or as simple for some folks. If you're a single parent with multiple kids and got a rough start, it's going to be more difficult for you. But I think most people can do this. And even if you can't, even if you don't want the financial independence part of it, there's so much value into just getting your money right in your life. So you want to work forever, fine, but let's talk and let's get your money straight so you have these options in the future.
I do want to point out that we were in a good financial position when I said, quit your job. We weren't struggling. We didn't have mounds of debt. I think we had a mortgage and that was it. We had savings. We had a good cushion and he had skills that were in demand. So he could have quit his job without getting a new job and taken a moment to breathe and figured out what he wanted and then gone and got a job.
And that's the importance of getting the foundation in place.
Yes. I don't want people to hear this story and say, wow, I hate my job. I'm going to quit today. And they have a mountain of debt and they don't really have a lot of great skills. And then they, you know, take this message and they're like, well, Mindy said I should quit my job and now I'm broke.
But I don't know. You can start fixing those things one thing at a time. Just take it one, you know, the elephant one thing at a time.
Yes. Start with one bite. But
I want to ask you about your ride then. Then why did you decide real estate? Like the financial dependence for us was going to be real estate.
The real estate part of it actually came before we discovered any of this. When we first got married, I had a house. It was my grandmother's house that I had purchased after my grandmother passed away. I purchased it from my mom's estate. And
did you get any pushback from other relatives when you did that?
They all got payouts, so I think they were fine with it. They just saw the money. No one else wanted the house. Yeah, everyone was fine. There's been no stress about that whatsoever. Yeah, so one day it was an old house and our bathroom faucet was leaking and I called up a plumber and the plumber's like, I could fix it. It'll be like $125. I'll be over tomorrow. So tomorrow comes, I don't hear from the guy. He never shows up. I call him back, nothing. So I'm like, I'm pretty mad at this. I'm trying to pay this guy to come fix this issue and he doesn't even have the courtesy to show up on time or return my call. So I'm like, screw this guy. And this is before YouTube. So they've got these things called libraries that are filled with these paper things called books. Yeah. Amazing. And that's how we used to get our knowledge. So I go to the library, get a book
for all you young people. That's how we used to get our knowledge.
Yes. So, and I see, I just have to buy this part from Home Depot for like, or whatever the home improvement store at the time for like $1. I went to Ace Hardware and I fixed it myself. I'm like, wow, I'm not a blue collar dude. I was a computer programmer, but this isn't that hard. And if this isn't that hard, I fix this plumbing thing. What else could we do? So that started us on this journey. Like, let's learn how to tile. Let's learn how to hang cabinets. So we did all this. We did some minor repairs in that house. And we sold it for $100,000 more than we had purchased it
for. Wow.
And all that was tax-free because of the IRS code. I don't know if the 2 out of 5 year rule was in place at that time, but they had a different rule. So the effect was the same. We paid no capital gains. And I was making about a third of that in my salary and less than a third after taxes. So like, holy cow, we just did a little bit of work on weekends. Let's do this again. So we bought our next house was a fixer upper and our next one after that and our next one after that. And we just kept on plowing money into these and repeating the same process. You laughed at me. What was going on?
Mindy you said we hung cabinets and I was remembering how we hung cabinets in the Monona house with the car jack and the boxes.
The car jack.
That was not the correct way to do it.
We have since learned a better way to hang cabinets.
They don't show that on the YouTube videos?
No.
It's so obvious the right way to do it. You just screw a little stringer to the wall like a 2x4 and you set the cabinet on that. If anyone wants help, give us a call.
We'll make a video.
Yeah. But this became then a lifestyle for the two of you, Mindy.
It did. And for a while, it was really great because we were married, but we didn't have kids. So we could just come home from our jobs and then work on the house for a while and go to bed and get up and do it all over again. Once we had kids, that kind of changed things, but it didn't change the way that we were working on the house.
Yeah, because now you got it did change things. Now you got a crew of four instead of a crew of two.
Well,
think about that.
Those infants don't really pull their weight.
Oh, one star.
And neither do the 7 or 8 year olds.
Yeah. Or the 12 year olds.
Despite my best efforts. Girls, this is a valuable skill.
We don't care.
Yeah, I don't want to learn this.
What were some of the early mistakes that you made on your houses besides maybe hanging cabinets with a car jack?
Well, definitely that one. Hiring the cheapest guys.
Oh.
The Monona house again. That was
we all want to do that, by the way. Yes. I mean, you think, hey, I get a few bids, I go with the cheapest one.
Yes. Well, the cheapest guy is going to be the cheapest guy. He's going to cut the corners. He's going to be, and they had a good pitch too. They talked about buying a house for their guys to work on over the winter time. This was in Wisconsin, where it's cold in the winter. They bought a house for their guys to work on so that they could keep them employed. And then they would just sell the house in the spring. And I thought that was really great. And they happened to be the cheapest, but they were 45 minutes away from our house. And they took the slowest way to get to our house. It was supposed to be a 3-month project and it took them 6 months.
Mm. And when they're halfway done, you can't really do anything about it. I mean, you're already on the train.
Yeah. And I mean, you can fire them and hire somebody else, but that's going to be even worse.
Sure.
Because now you've got to get somebody to come in and like fix their mistakes if there's mistakes, or like take over the project and they're going to think there's mistakes. And didn't one of the guys, like the foreman, got fired for drinking on the job or something? Like there was just a lot of mistakes with these guys. And that particular house we had, like they came and ripped off the roof, brand new roof that the people that we bought the house from had put on. They ripped off the roof because we were popping the top. And then they went home for the weekend. They put tarps over. And then this was
Oh no.
Can you see, Joe, you're ruining the punchline. A 500 year storm came in.
Oh.
And we're watching this on this website called Wonderground, and we're seeing purple come in. Red is just rain, and purple is like almost thunderstorms. And we have a 4-month-old baby, and it's raining from the light fixtures everywhere. There was a spot in the middle of our bed that we could put the baby where it wasn't wet. And then we just had buckets and bowls and anything that could collect water all over the house. It was just like, that was like the best experience of this old transaction. It was a really, really difficult house. And a lot of it was because we hired the wrong people.
Yeah. If you are going to hire out, be very, very careful. Because even if you ask for referrals, they're not going to give you any people who have been unhappy with their work. They're going to give you their brother or brother-in-law or something.
Remember that one we were calling up reference? Yeah. When they give you referral references, call up the references. I called up one reference and they're like, I have no idea why they put my name on that list. We're currently suing them.
Wow.
It's like, wow. Okay. Thank you. I don't need to call any more references for this
guy. Wow.
But yeah, absolutely call references and, you know, do a lot of research on the people that are working on your house. We were adding a second story. We were doing an enormous amount of work on this house. We did not do the requisite homework for the people that were going to be doing that much work. I think you don't have to do quite as much work when you're hiring an electrician to, you know, install can lights in your kitchen.
Right.
They just need to be licensed.
Why flip versus buy and hold real estate?
We actually do both. When we buy properties, we usually have multiple exit strategies. But when you buy one that's in poor condition, and now we've kind of pivoted to where I do most of the work myself, which we could talk about that, that's good and bad. But you have instant equity in it no matter what you're going to do with the house. We just purchased another one weeks ago, and we might turn it into a medium-term rental or perhaps a long-term rental. We might sell it. But the fact that it's in poor condition, that everything needs to be done on it, is superficial issues that I could probably fix in a month of pretty hard work. No matter what we decide to do with it, I'm going to have a lot of equity in it after that month.
How do you get that skill, though? Do you just have to mess one up like you guys did? I mean, do you just have to take your lumps, or is there some way that you would tell people to evaluate a property?
We look for things that are within our skill level. I don't want a house with foundation issues. There's a lot that goes into this. I'll back up a second. One thing I like to tell people is it's better to wait for a really good deal than to jump into an okay deal. You want to make sure there's lots of headroom in there for appreciation once you're done with the work. So this current house we're sitting in now, I think this took us, what, at least 2 years to find? Mm-hmm. But after that, so it, we could talk about this in depth, but I won't unless you want to. You have to find a great neighborhood, and you have to find one that has houses in your vintage. I don't want a house that's 100 years old because that's a whole other can of worms. So we find houses like 30 or 40 years old because most of those have superficial issues. If the foundation is going to sink, it's already done that, but it might have pink toilets and blue bathtubs. So that's pretty easy. I can rip that out. Minor electrical and plumbing work is pretty easy. I can do windows, but it's all superficial stuff. We're usually not doing a big rebuild. In addition, it's always difficult because then you're probably going to have to hire it out. And I guess it's going to be different for everyone. With if you're going to DIY it, it depends on what skills you have and what you want to do it. I would also tell people that I enjoy this in moderation. If you don't really enjoy it, maybe this isn't for you.
And who do you know? Because finding a contractor is really difficult. In 2008, there was this little housing crash, and a lot of the people who worked on houses went out of business and went and found jobs in other industries, and many of them have not come back. So contractors of all ilk are not there. It's difficult to find an electrician. It's difficult to find a plumber. It's difficult to find somebody to come in and do the work. And when you can find somebody who will call you back, they're quoting exorbitant prices. What did our friend pay for their basement remodel? Like $50,000 or $35,000? It was an enormous amount of money to remodel their basement or finish off their basement.
Well, our friend just got a quote for $100,000, and it's a little bit bigger than ours. But just to put that in perspective, I think ours, we have about 15 into it. And there was a lot of heavy lifting here, but it's because I've DIY'd it. Theirs is a little bit bigger. If I did their basement, probably would have been $30,000.
Yeah, but $30,000 to DIY versus $100,000 to hire somebody else to do it. So your original question was, how do you figure out what you want to do? You know, what skills do you have? What contractors do you know? Who can you get to do the work? And, you know, then start looking for properties that fit those criteria. I mean, if all you're going to do is paint the walls and put in new flooring and maybe redo the kitchen, that's something you can do yourself, or you can more easily find somebody to do the work. Whereas if you're going to, like in this house, we redid the kitchen and the bathrooms and we did this whole basement and we built the deck on the backyard and we're going to re-landscape everything. And that's a lot more work. That's a lot of different contractors that you have to find or do the work yourself. But again, Carl said, we started doing this before YouTube. YouTube University is the best free college that there is. And you can go to YouTube and search for any project you want to do. How do I hang drywall? How do I build a deck? How do I paint a wall? And there's 11,000 videos that'll show you how to do it.
I was just doing this the other day with my windshield wiper blades on this car. First time I've changed them. I actually was at a place and they were going to do it for me. And the price they wanted was just, I'm like, I think I can go down to O'Reilly's and get my own. But I had to watch three different YouTube videos before I found the one that actually worked. But I love that. I mean, once I finally found the right people, but I think that's the same on your real estate journey. Like once you find the few contractors that you guys need to work with now, I would imagine it's a simple phone call because you probably have the team, right? In the case where you can't do it yourself.
Yeah. With some people, with others, it's difficult to deal with contractors because what I found is if they have work tomorrow, they don't care about today. But like I remember the guys.
What do you mean by
if they have work today, they don't care about tomorrow?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, I reverse that. Yeah, yeah. If they have work today,
like, what do you mean by that? I don't know. Yeah.
So like the guys working on our house, they were about a week from being done, and they started asking me, like, "Well, do you know any other jobs around here?" I'm like, "No, not really." I'm like, "You guys don't have anything lined up?" Like,
so they're not lining stuff up.
Yeah.
But on the other side, I know when I have a project, if somebody, you know, wants to wait 3 weeks, I will keep calling. So maybe the problem is also the consumer, isn't it?
Yeah, it might be. I think a lot of people are really, really good at construction, but not so good at the business end of it. And that's just our narrow experience.
Yeah.
We don't deal a lot with contractors anymore just because I've been so turned off by dealing with poor ones that we just do it ourselves. And even we had really great ones for our past house. I can't get them to
return my call anymore. I've given them references or I've given them to other people.
Now they're just too busy on other stuff.
I guess so. I have no idea because I can't get a hold of them. Just so
the same guys who were scrambling to find work at the end of our job won't call us back, even though we paid them. We paid them on time. We paid them every week.
It's surreal.
Scrambling. Yes.
It is a weird business.
Yeah, it is. And I think that Carl said that he thinks maybe it's just our narrow view. I've seen a lot more through my work at Bigger Pockets. And I think it's, there are going to be contractors who are good at running their business, but most of them are just good at doing construction.
Yeah, I think it's systemic because, man, I've had it in Texarkana. My son with his rental properties had a hell of a time putting a team together. He doesn't do any of the work by himself. He has a team, but it probably took him the first three or four houses to find the team. And to your point, Carl, I think part of his magic is he always has the next one ready to go. And so it makes it easy for them to not have to worry about business. They just ride Nick's next job, and follow him that way.
To drive this point home, Joe, we were talking about construction and you were talking about some projects in Texarkana. And when you were talking about this, the thought that was going through my head was, I wonder if when these guys are done with Joe, I wonder if they want to come up to Colorado. Like, I'll give them an all expense paid trip because they look like they're pretty good. And Joe's had a good experience. And I'm not kidding either. I've tried to outsource people like Amish are really good at doing fences and steel roofs. Like,
yeah,
hey, you want an all expenses paid trip to Colorado? I don't know how you do transportation and all that. Horse and buggy might take a little while. I think they'll take buses, but
trains.
Okay. Yeah. So steel roof. They're good for that. And yeah, that's how painful it's been to try to hire people. For the last one, I think I found
that is bad when you will just import people from other states.
Yeah, I'll import people from other countries. Hell, yes. I had someone from like some Eastern European country saying, hey, I'd like to come over. And I'm like, sure. But I think we put a spreadsheet of like 50 people. We needed carpenters. We wanted to hire out the rough carpentry. And out of 50, two returned our call. One showed up and none of them worked out. How it finally happened was I happened to be walking around the neighborhood and talked to the people. I saw that they were doing good work. I'm like, when's your job up? Do you want to do this one after that? Sure. But it drives me nuts. I'm getting anxiety right now. It's making me mad. Joe, when do your guys become available?
Well, actually, they're available right now because my stuff is finished. So
we better get on it.
Jump on it. Initially, your goal was 1,500 days of work. Tell me that journey. How did that end up working out?
Yeah. So, and to back up a second, we already had good savings, as Mindy mentioned earlier, but we did not have enough to retire. I just pulled some numbers out of my rear and thought, hey, if we earn 10% a year and contribute X amount and tweak our life a little bit, we had a really nice house. We moved to a really bad one, which became another fixer-upper. It would take us about 1,500 days to retire. That was $1 million with no debt. And it actually, we got there a year earlier because this was 2013 and we had a really, really great market.
Nice updraft in the stock market.
Really great tailwind. And the whole goal was kind of silly because to try to predict short-term movement in the stock market, like anything under a decade or maybe two decades, is pretty ridiculous. But hey, it worked out for us, right? Made for some good vlog fodder.
Well, but this is a question though, with the market being down now, Mindy, does that worry you and being able to continue to do what you want to do when you do what you want to do?
No, it doesn't worry me at all because I'm not investing for tomorrow. I'm investing for 10, 20 years down the road.
Is this where, though, having another stream of income like you have comes into play?
It is certainly more helpful to have a job that is bringing in income when the stock market goes down.
Yeah.
We can live off of my salary, which is really nice. And I'm a real estate agent, so I've got that salary. His blog brings in income. We've got that money coming in. We have some real estate syndications. We have this new house, so that's going to generate some income. We have a co-working space that generates some income. So there's all these different places to pull income from. We could sell stocks if we needed to, but we don't need to. And that is very comforting to be in that position.
But I love this idea. At the beginning of this discussion, we talked about deciding let's hit pause because you had that foundation built. And now you're at the point, though, that you're working doing things that you love. So why not?
Well, and we have two children who are 15 and 12. The little one is going into seventh grade. So she still has 5 more years at home. Not at least 5 years. She has 5 years at home. And then once she's graduated from high school, get out.
I just got to say, I heard her play the bassoon yesterday And I think Imagine Dragons is probably going to come get her in the next year or two. She's going to be going on tour with one of these big bands, maybe Katy Perry. I don't know.
Could be. Yeah. She is an aspiring bassoonist.
Kid's got a future.
But
that's what a bassoon sounds like.
That's Carl's impression of the bassoon.
So we're location dependent for at least 5 more years. I like what I do. If I didn't, I wouldn't work there. But I like what I do and I want to stay there. I need to fill up my days. And I could fill up my days with something else if I didn't have this job. But I have this job that both generates income and I enjoy. So as long as I enjoy it, I'm going to stay there. And, you know, when the stock market's down, maybe I enjoy it a little bit more.
That's just slightly more. I like that. No pressure, but it certainly motivates me a little bit to get out of bed, right? Yeah.
And, you know, I do want to point out, I don't think people are talking about this enough, in the 4% rule, in Bill Bengen's original research, there was one period of time where...
Just the 4% rule for people that don't know, because we've talked about this a couple times. 4% of your nest egg is what you can spend reliably to get where you want to go, as long as it's invested, earning a reasonable rate of return. I think that what's 4% rule? Seven?
Seven?
I think it's
7%.
I think it's a 7% return.
And he had a 60-40 stock allocation.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating read. Have you ever read the original article?
A long time ago.
Oh, it's so
long,
good.
long time ago.
So good.
Yeah.
But in the 4% rule, the one instance or the one period of time where money didn't last at least 30 years was when you retired into a period of incredible inflation, which is where we're at right now. And I'm not saying that to scare people. I'm saying that to, you know, alert people, hey, do some research. Michael Kitsis has an amazing article where he extrapolated Bill Bengen's original research because Bill did it in the 90s. And Michael continued on. And again, it was that period of time where we hit really high inflation right when you were retiring. And he calculated it went below zero, but it was like one time.
Yeah.
And the 4% rule is only 4% because of that one period of time. It's actually more like 6 or 7%. So in many cases, when you retire, you have a lot more.
You can make it. Like somebody that did start tapping their investments in 2013 in that uproar stock market, probably even today is still good at a higher percentage.
Yeah. So if you're thinking about retiring now, maybe look at your spending, look at your nest egg. If you're just barely hitting your 4% rule number, maybe consider a part-time job or consider a different, maybe you don't spend so much, maybe you don't pull out so much, but be aware of your finances. You don't just retire and stop looking at your money.
I do not like that. I don't know. I got to what? I got to keep paying attention, Mindy. Is that your point? That's horrible.
Yes.
That is just rotten. Well, I like this idea though of solve for flexibility, not for optimization, right? I mean, too often we go, oh, I barely have enough. Let's pull the trigger. Not a good time. I want to ask you about what's going on in your respective podcasts, because obviously we have people that love listening to other podcasts. And Carl, because we haven't talked on this show much at all about Mile High Fi. So you and Doug, crazy show. What do you guys got coming up?
Yeah, who do we have coming up? We like to interview interesting people. And luckily, we're in Longmont. So Longmont is a bit of
no shortage.
Yeah, it's kind of like a mecca for early retirees. Mr. Money Mustache is right here. And we're here because of him. We sent him an email and say, hey, how's Longmont? Let's come check it out. And boom, we're here.
Where were you at before here?
We were in Parker, Colorado for a very short stint. And prior to that, we were in the Midwest, like Chicagoland and Wisconsin.
But you don't have the wonderful accent down. I love accents, no matter where they are, like the Northeast Texas, where I'm at now. But I loved calling Minneapolis when I worked with American Express. That's where our headquarters was. And they'd be like, okay, there, Joe, how you doing? Yeah.
I've tried to, sometimes if I'm nervous or tired, my Chicago accent comes up, but I try to suppress it because I don't think it's pleasant. I like your pizza. I just don't like your accent, Chicago.
Wow. Chicago sent your hate mail to Carl.
Whoa, yes. No, Chicago's a great city. I love it.
But who's coming up? Who's coming up? A good story coming?
Who is coming up? I'm trying to figure out. It's mostly locals. So the thing about our podcast is we've had some great big people on there. We've had Paul Pant on there. We've had Pete, Mr. Money Mustache on there, but I think it's just as good and maybe even more interesting to interview local people.
These untold stories.
Yeah, because those are the people who aren't making money from a blog. These are the people who are really living the FI life and living by the 4% rule. So yeah, to tamp down any excitement, it's just locals. But I think we have one with a guy named Eric Peterson, who's a local friend and just outstanding. What a great guy he is. And he was actually in the mutual fund industry. So he's like, I worked for the dark side. funds, and I saw the light and I stopped doing that. But he had a lot of really good insight on why a lot of actively managed funds aren't a great idea, and a really good FI story on top of that. And we're going to have Mindy on again soon. I don't know if you know that, but it's going to be great, whatever we do.
I didn't know that, but hooray.
How about that? Congratulations.
And Joey, it would be awesome to have you on. I just got
guest booking. It'd be fun.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We had fun last night just hanging out with the Longmont crowd. And Mindy, what's going on at Bigger Pockets Money?
We have a story coming up. It's a friend of Scott's, and his nickname is Ruthless Toothless because he's a... He's a hockey player, former hockey player and rugby player, and he lost his two front teeth, and he's in the military, and he's about to get permanent replacements.
Veneers. And
but he can pull out his teeth very easily, and he does it at the end of, there's a video, and he does it at the end, and I was like, oh my God, it's really shocking.
Whole different look.
Wow, teeth are very important. But he's got a really great story because he was a financial disaster. And when I say that, a lot of people are thinking, oh, okay, so we had like a 520 credit score. No, he had like a 412 credit score. He just didn't want to think about it, so he didn't. And he saw Scott buy beer for everybody on the rugby team, and he's like, how is this young kid buying beer for everybody? What is he doing that I'm not doing? Like, how is he?
And by Scott, for people who don't know, this is Mindy's co-host and the CEO of Bigger Pockets, Scott Trench.
Yes, Scott Trench. So he asked Scott, how are you able to do this? And this is the best part of his story. Scott shared with him how you fix your money, and he took the advice and took action and fixed his money.
And Scott's probably in his 20s or maybe 30 at the time.
Scott was probably in his 20s at the time. So, I mean, he's only barely 30 now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was in his 20s at the time and like very impressively buying beer for people. And this guy took action and fixed his finances. You know, there's a lot of people who are embarrassed that their money situation is in a bad place. So they just ostrich syndrome, hide their head in the sand and don't even want to fix it.
Because it might get better if I don't look at it.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly how it works all the time. So it was just really nice to hear this story that not only did I take action, I fixed my finances, and now I am in a great financial position. I have 4 rental properties with my wife. We're doing really great. And we are building our financial future.
Mindy, Carl, thanks so much for not only hosting me here at the Jensen Ranch, but thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. This was so much fun.
Joe, it's always lovely to talk to you.
Hey, Nick Loper here from the Side Hustle Show. When I'm not helping people earn money outside of their day job, I'm stacking Benjamins.
Big thanks to Carl and Mindy for not only that fantastic interview. This just makes me want to go out. And I'm not a real estate investor, OG, but it makes me want to go buy some houses. Yes. And they've been so successful at it. But I like what they talked about, OG. Don't go quit your job without setting up that foundation. And people want to skip the foundational stuff, but because they had a good foundation, Mindy could say, yeah, Carl, let's do it. Let's go ahead and quit now and we'll figure it out. And I feel like that's the difference between people that make it through that moat, that tough period, and people who don't, is having the debt paid off, like we talked about earlier, and having a good emergency fund to draw from.
Yep, it matters.
And by the way, if people are disgruntled, and I think, Doug, what you're doing here might be a soliloquy on the nature of that word. Disgruntled is the lack of gruntled.
Oh, that helps.
Well, that's the point. What does it mean to be gruntled? I'm not sure.
I don't know, but I'm doing those exercises every day here in my chair. Those are the exercises you can do to really, without even having to get up, the gruntling exercises.
Your inner thigh exercises. Oh, yeah. So you can get all gruntled.
My gruntle muscle is so strong. I've got total control over my gruntle muscle.
Well, maybe they'll get you better life insurance rates. Hey, let's throw out the Haven Lifeline and tackle some of life's most important questions. I don't know. I just realized our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, Doug, they put what you value first.
Finding a checkout line at Costco with nobody in it.
Oh, does that happen? Is there such a thing?
It does. And when you see it, angels, like, you don't even have to be done shopping. When you see it, you sprint to that line because that never happens.
Because you're done then.
It's like a sunny day in Ireland. Just doesn't happen.
My least favorite thing that happens, I would say 4 out of 5 times we go to the grocery store, Cheryl's like, you get in line and I got to run back and get something.
Right.
And invariably then I'm at the front of the line. We're completely checked out. I've got 5 people behind me and we're still waiting for her to come to the front.
Yeah. Is there an urgency, a panic worse that you're sitting there waiting? You're looking over your shoulder. Come on, Cheryl. Come on, Cheryl. I'm almost there.
I've gotten to the point.
Terrified.
I got to the point now where I'm just like, nope, nope. She's like, but we're going to wait in that line. I'm like, no, no, no. I would be the one waiting in that line. I'd rather wait together with you than get the death stare from 4 people behind me. Cause we're all waiting for you for right. The poppy seed dressing. Yeah.
That sounds very specific. I
don't know where that came from. Wow. Let's get back to the read. It says Matt at Haven Life.
The poppy seed dressing.
Matt's like, isn't it time for us to talk about Haven Life? Yes. Less time at the Costco checkout, Doug, means more time living. And also, by the way, that's the same reason they've made buying quality term life insurance actually simple. Their application is simple online. You get an instant coverage decision, affordable prices, and all policies issued by their parent company, Mass Mutual, more than 160-year-old insurer. If you know that you need insurance, just get it done now. Get it done right now and then go about your summer. StackyBenjamins.com/HavenLife tells them that we sent you. Today's, we're going to throw out the Haven Lifeline to David. Say hey, David.
Hey, Joe and OG. First of all, I want to say thank you guys for all that you have done. I've been listening to you for the last 4 years. And although I really haven't learned anything, I do know that there was accidentally a day back in 2018 that I learned something about HSAs. And since then, have been fully investing into it and plan on using it as a retirement account. Past 2 years in my work in education have been really tough, and I've been wondering how much longer I'm going to be able to stay doing this. I'm currently 55 with 32 years as a teacher and as an administrator. My question today really is about adding a VEBA account upon retirement. In my district, I can cash out 25% of my unused sick days and vacation days when I retire. This would be about 80 days that could be put into a VEBA account. Now, I've heard that you cannot contribute to both a VEBA and an HSA in the same year. Is that true? I've been researching the topic online and have found nothing. So I thought I would ask the only people that I know that are actually smarter than the internet. I'm also wondering if there's a loophole here. If my district is putting the money into the VEBA account on my behalf, is that okay since I would not be contributing that money? Or does this mean that I should not contribute to the HSA in my final year since the VEBA contribution would be so much greater? Thank you for all you do. Despite the show having no educational value, I will continue to recommend it to all my friends.
And we cut him off. Right as he's giving us a compliment, we cut off David. We're like, okay, enough. Let's get on with that. Man, we got some stuff going on here because, Doug, you and I were talking about this a little bit earlier. What David has where he can use his sick days, pile them at the end, doesn't happen as often as it used to. So if people are thinking that they're going to take a bunch of sick days at the end of their career, you might want to check with your HR to make sure that still is the same.
Yeah. Though ask that question carefully because it's a major tip off. Well, gee, Mike, why do you ask?
Hypothetically, if I wanted to take sick day starting tomorrow,
how many sick days do I have? Well, according to this, you have 120.
See ya.
See, that'll get me through December 31. So,
how do I get my paperwork, Jane? That's question 2. Yeah, so you might not be able to do that. So David's lucky. Right. Second question, though, before we actually answer his question, OG, he mentioned a type of account that a lot of people might not know much about. People may know an HSA, but they don't know this other type of account he's talking about. What's this account he's referencing?
It works just like a HSA, only it's funded with employer dollars. So an HSA, you put your money in, employers can put money in. An HRA, like a healthcare reimbursement account, it's kind of like that, or an FSA, which could be a combination of both. So it's really just kind of employer contributions only, not employee contributions. So it works a little bit differently, but it kind of sort of the same in that it helps reimburse medical costs, mostly things like dental and vision costs in retirement. And once you've eliminated that and like you have to pay the deductible, it's a little more complicated than HSAs, then you can use it for medical reimbursements.
So diving into his question then, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so what he's talking about is he's saying, I've got some sick days left, and instead of taking them in cash, I would like to take them in basically in retirement funds and kind of finagle the payout so that the leftover sick days that I would normally get paid and taxed on, I'm going to take that money and put it into this, effectively into this healthcare account for retirement. And that's totally fine to do. Yep. I don't see why you wouldn't do it. If you have extra money and you don't need the cash for anything, that's fine. I wouldn't retire with sick days left over. I think you said I get to cash in 25% of my sick days. It's like, well, make sure you use those other 75% on days off. You know, like don't.
Well, based on Dave's message about being able to actually retire and how he's not sure he's going to make it the next few years, I bet he's got a plan for every one of those sick days, don't you?
Yeah. And you're right. I think it's kind of the double-edged sword of kind of sort of unlimited PTO, which is all the rage now. We've been doing it at our company forever, but the double-edged sword of you don't earn PTO is you don't get to retire with that big bonus. You know what I mean? Like that used to be kind of all the cool stuff. You'd work your tail off those last 5 years to drive up your income, work tons of overtime to make sure that your pension calculation was really high. And then you'd stick it to the man and retire with 2 years of vacation and get one big check of, you know, $180,000 or something like that, you know, on the last day. But that's really not a thing. So if you can use it and put it in a qualified plan somehow, I mean, this would be no different than saying, okay, I'm not contributing enough to my retirement plan. I've got a 401k or I've got a 403b and a 457. So in educators, usually have both, right? A 403b and a 457. So you can contribute 20,000 to each one, 40,000, 41,000 this year in total. So it'd be no different than saying, well, I'm just going to take a higher distribution or a higher contribution amount into my 403b this year, the year that I'm going to retire. And then at the end of my working, I'm going to get this bonus back, which is going to kind of help fill the coffers back up. If that makes sense, you just kind of changing the cash flow timing a little bit. But if that's all taken care of and you want to use this for an additional healthcare expenses, I think that's a good idea.
Thanks for the question, Dave. And you know what? Because Dave was brave and called in with his question and probably helped a ton of people maybe learn something crazy that might happen. We're going to send David a Stacky Benjamin's Greatest Money Show on Earth Haven Life t-shirt, which is incredibly comfortable. It's sexy, amazing. People are going to go, dude, where'd you get that? You know how he got it? By just calling him with his question, stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail. That's going to do it for today. Just a couple of housekeeping things. Number one is if you want to hang out with us, we're only doing this for a few more weeks. We make the Friday shows every Monday just for the rest of summer. You can join us on our YouTube channel. By the way, a lot of new things beginning to happen over on our YouTube channel. Put Stacking Benjamin's podcast into the search feature, subscribe to the channel, hit the little bell, and that will notify you when we go live. But it's 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific to give you the specific time that we're going to do this. Some days we show up a minute or two late, so if we're not there right at 5 p.m., we're just getting the microphones all set and ready to go. Second is, once a quarter, for people that have referred others to our 201 newsletter, we have a hangout with that inner circle of people that refer our newsletter out. We've got another one coming up late here in July. So begin, stackers, if you're playing that 201 referral game, make sure you refer enough people that you can hang out with us and have a private chat just for that group of people. But it's stackingbenjamins.com/201 inside every 201 newsletter. we tell you about our referral program. Last but not least, if you're not here for additional tips like our newsletter or to watch us make the show live on YouTube, you just need better financial help in your corner. You need a better team. OG and his team can help you think bigger about your financial goals. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/OG. That's the link to his calendar so that you in the second half this year can begin rocking your financial plan. stackingbenjamins.com/OG. All right, Doug, I think I checked all those boxes. My friend, what should we have learned today?
Well, Joe, first, listen to Carl and Mindy Jensen. Ready to quit your job? Don't go off half-cocked. Go off fully cocked by building your base first. Second, sick days? Remember, those are currency too. Find out your company policy well before trying to cash them in at the end of your career. Had the big lesson? If you really want to get gruntled, head to Reno. Sure, they charge extra for that, but it is totally worth it. Thanks to Carl and Mindy Jensen for joining us today. Check them out at 1500days.com, the Mile High Fi Show, and the Bigger Pockets Money Show, wherever you listen to podcasts. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2022, and is created by Joe Saul-Sehy. Our producer is Karen Repine. The show is written by the brilliant Paulette Perhatch, with help from Joe, me, and Doc G from the Earn and Invest podcast. After you listen to our show, check out the 201 Deep Dives, written by our website manager and blog editor, Brooke Miller. You'll find the 411 on all things money at the 201. Just go to stackingbenjamins.com/201. Once we bottle up all this goodness, we ship it to our engineer, the amazing Steve Stewart. Steve helps the rest of our team sound nearly as good as I do right now. Want to chat with friends about the show later? Mom's friend Gertrude is our social media coordinator and the room mother in our Facebook group called The Basement. So, say hello when you see us posting online. Here's a weird fact. Both she and Tina Eichenberg are never in the same room at the same time. To join all the basement fun with other stackers, type stackingbenjamins.com/basement. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show. Not only should you not take advice from these dorks, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor. OG's sole contribution so far is clearing his throat.
Three, two, one.
Sounds like the Manumana song from Muppets.
Hey, you missed out. Delta flight from Grand Rapids to Minneapolis was overbooked. So they were offering $10,000 per person to get off the plane.
What?
Person said that there was not a mad rush and they offered $10,000. There was one or two people who stood up.
Sorry, did you say there still wasn't a mad rush?
That is what I said, yes. One or two people got it.
Whatever meeting I had could have been canceled. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
I could have totally canceled that meeting.
The flight was, you would have taken the next flight, which was 2 hours later.
Oh,
the entire flight should have taken him up on that. Holy crap. Wow. And it's not, maybe they didn't understand, because it's not just that you get air credit now. They're just giving out money. I mean, yeah. The intern got his $1,000 and it was like, he had his choice of ways to get the money and gift cards and credits and different retail and restaurants. And I mean,
piece of gift card.
$10,000.
Well, the part of the $1,000 that you didn't claim is rent, right?
Right.
Oh, you're behind on your rent payment. What do you mean rent payment?
I did confiscate that.
Yes. Back when you were 4, we had you sign a contract. Remember the game we played called Sign a Contract with Dad? Yeah. I'm reeling that in now. Well, this show's over, Stackers, but you know what? It's Military Appreciation Month, and that means that we've got time still for a shout-out to members of our community, members of our family who have served our country. And you know what? Today, I want to give a shout-out to two of my uncles, my Uncle Henry, who is in the Army. Well, let's do three. My Uncle Eddie, who is in the Army, and my Uncle Bill, also in the Army. And two of them served in Vietnam. One served in Korea. And a big thanks to all three of my uncles, my dad's brothers, who served like he did in the military. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just my uncles, but they want to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Of course, you may be eligible for Navy Federal membership, and you don't even know it because it's open to all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families. They're all eligible, and I want to reiterate, and their families. If you have family, like I do, who served in the military, well, then you're eligible for Navy Federal membership. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve, and many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. Here during Military Appreciation Month, Stackers, go visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you're going to see all of Navy Federal's Military Appreciation Month offers. So many cool things they're doing for veterans. You'll also see all their other awesome 24/7, 12 months of the year offers. That's NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.